Get to Old Navy for star-spangled style. Right now, everything's on sale, up to 60% off. That's right, get everything from tees, shorts, dresses, and swim, all at 60% off. Now till July 7th at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid through 7/7, select styles only.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and I've forgotten how I do this. It's been so long. I've been away, but this is A Bit of Culture. I'm Cam Ruslan. I'm back now after a long break, back with old-timer from A Bit of Culture History, Sharad Kooten.
Always a pleasure to be here, Cam.
And we also have Edin Koo.
Good to be back.
What should we say? He's a preserver of the arts.
Polymath, autodidact. No, actually, you went to school, right?
Yeah. So, two cultural heavy hitters in Malaysia and myself. So, our three topics this week. Topic number one is Alfonso de Albuquerque. Topic number two is book covers. And finally, topic number three will be the late, great MGR. So, I've been away. And I went to Lisbon, amongst other places. And Lisbon, of course, is the capital city of Portugal and the home of Alfonso de Albuquerque, the man who I should think pretty well most Malaysians should know, led the Portuguese fleet in the capture of Malacca back in what year, everyone?
1511.
It was it, Edin?
1511, yes.
Okay, right. It had it confirmed. And so I was there, and I was looking out for him, and I saw him mentioned a few times, and I went to the National Maritime Museum, a big painting of him. Whenever he is mentioned in Portugal, he is always referred to as the Viceroy of India, and never as the conqueror of Malacca. In fact, Malacca, I went around the Maritime Museum, Malacca was never mentioned, which I found rather strange. And I'm wondering, when I was looking at his painting, how should I, as a Malaysian, as a Malay for that matter, respond to this? Because I know plenty of usually older Malay nationalist types who still talk about the fall of Malacca as being perhaps the one moment in history that they can remember, but also
they were there, some of them, that old.
But as the thing that we must never happen again. You know, if, say, they would say, Malays are disunited, then we will fall like Malacca did. And if there is a character in Malaysian history who is a villain, I do believe that Alfonso de Albuquerque is that character. But I'm just wondering, the historian in me on the other hand says, no, I mean, history is just stuff that happened, and it's for us to know why and what it all means.
I think one of the things that is presumed in this kind of talk, you know, even if you take Malacca as a metaphor, and you don't assume people are being literal when they say, you know, the things they say about Malacca and Malayness and all that, is the idea that there's some sort of line that stretches back in time that's continuous and unbroken and that hasn't been, in some sense, constantly reconstructed, right? So what would have been the view of the fall of Malacca, say, in the late 18th century? You know, what would the multiple Malay societies of that time, the royal houses of that time, how would they have viewed that history? And clearly, we're looking at from a particular lens in the 20th century with the rise of Malay nationalism around the nation state. And you can see, I mean, most nation states need foundational myths, right? And so Malacca is part of that, a plank in the foundational myths in the creation of the Malay, as it were, the Malay state, the Malaysian state.
I'm very interested in the historical imagination. Because, you know, we've been unable to disconnect ourselves from the myth-making impulse. And myths, of course, are the foundational elements in our history, and myths as metaphors. And once we've encountered the clear light of history, we tend to keep on myth-making. Hence, the good and the evil, the hero and the villain. Albuquerque is interesting, of course, because the notion of the fall of Malacca dovetails the other famous myth, which is Takkan Melayu Hilang di Dunia, purportedly said by Hang Tuah, and that has been given rise to so many interpretations. But, you know, the evil figures in Malay history have been constant and consistent. There is Albuquerque, there is Birch, there is Chin Peng, and there is this sense of trying to focus every kind of debacle or crisis in Malay history through the ages into one figure.
I mean, but is it possible for us to graduate, as is any people around the world, any cultures, from those kinds of foundational myths and, you know, and the process and the dynamics of myth making? I mean, what are myths after all but stories we tell ourselves to explain ourselves to ourselves, right? I mean, that's what a myth is essentially, right? And so what does Malacca tell us? Malacca tells us that we are a complex society, but we had internal problems, right? So it's a story about, in some sense, the outsiders are peripheral to the story of the insider, the dynamics between ourselves, you know, which is why, you know, Cam, you rightly point out, it's, you know, if we are divided, we will fall, you know, not to the Portuguese again or to whoever. It doesn't really matter who the outside is. The important thing is the inside. And I think that's what's being focused on.
One of the very interesting things about Malacca is, of course, this immediately projecting the conquest of Malacca to an external factor, when in effect we understand that Malacca itself was in complete decay. And by the last Sultan, Sultan Ahmad Shah, you know, things had become so corrupt and become so untenable. There was factionalism, there was fratricide, there was, you know, civil strife, all kinds of things going on in Malacca.
Yeah, these are kind of, you know, details. Spare us the details, Ed. It was a golden age, and that's all we need to know. But what we're talking about here is historical determinism, the cherry picking of history to help us describe who we think we are today. I don't know if you ever read the book 1066 and all that.
Mm.
A very funny book, quite an old book now,
1930s. The date of the Battle of Hastings, right?
Yeah. In that book from the 1930s, I think, it looks at, in a very funny way, the history of England and breaks everything down into either being a good thing or a bad thing. So, you know, the Battle of Hastings was a bad thing, but then it eventually gave us parliamentary democracy, so therefore it was a good thing. I think we can't help but look at things. I try not to, but I think we can't help but break things down into either being a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, what about the Portuguese side of this conversation, right? Did you learn anything about how the Portuguese viewed the world? I mean, you already suggested that the Malacca episode doesn't rate very highly in terms of...
I would think consciously expunged, quite frankly.
By the Portuguese themselves?
Because it would be an embarrassment to them. Whereas the Viceroy of India, I mean, they didn't conquer India. They had a few ports along the coast.
No, they had Goa. I mean, this is very interesting because, you know, the Portuguese conquest of Malacca is a very, very important, first of all, the circumnavigation of the Cape. And it really was, if you study, perhaps the first European colony in European colonialism was Malacca. You know, the actual taking over of the administration and of a certain state.
Well, you're ignoring several ports that were taken in Africa, but anyway.
In Africa and, of course, in Goa. Mm. But, you know, in terms of the structure, in terms of the trade structures.
And Malacca was an empire, right?
It was an empire,
not just a port city.
Exactly.
It was an empire the size of present-day Malacca State.
Well, you know, okay.
No, I mean, it had very... No, it's not...
It's a network empire, maybe.
Yeah, it was a very, very prosperous... I mean, we have done nothing, of course, to... You know, by mythologizing Malacca, we've done nothing to actually talk about its real links and its real influence. And, you know, one of the high achievements of Malacca was diplomacy, to gain the protection of the Chinese. And today, that's very resonant when you look at the expansion of Chinese power in this region. It is Ming diplomacy. That's what it is.
And they have just negotiated themselves a port,
exactly,
I believe. So history comes around, goes around, and we have a different fall of Malacca impending. We must move on. Obviously, the story of Malacca and Afonso de Albuquerque, we could talk about it for ages. But instead, we're going to go to topic number two, which is Sherard and his book covers.
Well, this really is the result of me having advanced look at the new book by our Nadeswaran citizen Nades called Churi Churi Malaysia. And he showed us this really handsome book. It's essentially white with a picture of a bunga raya that when you look closely is burning up. One of the petals is on fire. It's very subtle, and you kind of have to really look at it to kind of like discern what the image is. And then he said, well, you know, the original cover was to be something that had the Malaysian ringgit note on it. And he said Bank Negara opposed this because even though they had the word chonto, which means sample or whatever it is, it was still not kosher enough for Bank Negara. They didn't want it on the cover. And I thought, well, actually, I love the second version, you know, because the first was a two on the nose, right? Churi churi, then you have banknotes, whatever. But I thought about covers, and, you know, I know that I am a person deeply attracted to the book as an object, not just for what's in the pages and the ideas, which is why I haven't graduated Kindle, you know, and I love the book as an object. And the cover is very an important part of that. I've got somebody bought me a subscription to the New York Review of Books. And one of the things I do often is to read that those pages that have the new books on issue, because they're so beautiful. And I just want to just look at them. I stare at them and I think, oh, you know. And I love the different styles. It really does turn me on.
Edin, do you have any books?
A few.
Just one or two lying around.
Yes.
Don't you feel that about book covers? Well, Cam, you have lots of books too.
I do too. But do you, Edin?
He's moved to Kindle.
No, no way. No. Choi. do you judge a book by its cover? I think we all do.
I am very drawn to book covers.
Have you been fooled by a book cover?
In more recent times, yes. I think they wrote a lot better maybe about 10 years ago. So you could normally, you know, pick up a book with a book cover and be quite satisfied. These days, I'm quite disappointed at the content, but I love the book cover, so I keep it.
Yeah, I mean, I have, one should not judge a book by its cover, but we do. And I have many times bought books because the cover looked incredibly exciting. I read a lot of history. So that it's a very exciting battle scene or something. It's like, oh my God, I read the book and it's really dull. And it has no social history in there at all.
But okay, so that's a different order of things, right? I mean, it's like you have to have a great cover, you have to have a great title, and I know a lot of books have disappointed despite great titles. I think of this book called Wittgenstein's Poker. Mm. Have you read that?
Oh, that's a brilliant book. Right? I love that book. That's amazing.
Everything seems to turn on this this clash between these two great giants. I mean, these giants in philosophy, Karl Popper and Wittgenstein. But it's actually such a small moment in the book. So much of the book is the context, Viennese society, da, 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 da. And by the time you get to that encounter, you're thinking, boy, there isn't very much of this, you know. But it's a great title, isn't it?
But, you know, there were great pioneering publishers that really looked at book covers as an art form. And books have now been released. I've got a couple of catalogs, essentially catalogs of book covers through the ages of Penguin. And one of the great, really great publishers that have consistently looked at book covers as an art form is New Directions in the United States. They have a designer, one of the great designers, Alvin Lustig. And now, you know what they're doing is coming up with entire postcard collections. I own about 10 of these postcard collections,
just the book covers
as postcards.
Right. Well, the interesting thing is when books are reissued and they have different covers. And I'm forgetting the name of the author who wrote And the Rain Might Drink.
Han Su-yin's
book. So I have two editions of that, right? One is the very simple, modern, if you like to call it, but anyway, design, you know, very clean and just the words and all that. And then I have another edition, which is the lurid cover of the European man.
There's a 1950s edition.
Yeah. And this Asian woman kind of almost half naked in an embrace.
Yes.
Lurid colors, lurid, just endless detail. And, you know, and I love them both. I mean, I just think that they're both
Of their time.
And that is an excitement. I mean, it's really nonsense, right? To spend your time looking at book covers and think, oh, it's so nice.
Well, I love Penguin. I always have loved Penguin.
Always.
Because of the standard size. And I think I love it for the same reason I love IKEA. It's this sort of industrialized selling of comfort and coziness. You can get this mass, and I have these bookshelves, just Penguin. Yeah. They're all perfectly the same size, but have so many different stories inside them.
Yeah, this is this thing that people don't want to talk about anymore is good taste. I think good book covers essentially help you develop good taste for everything.
We're happy to talk about good taste here. Maybe the others are not, but we are.
Yeah, I'm very happy to.
Yeah.
They're unafraid on a bit of culture.
Yeah, yeah. So ultimately, Sharad, you were given, presumably, just the book because it was a...
Nadis's book? Yeah. No, I didn't. Unfortunately, it'll be available online.
You will purchase it?
I will purchase it. I just got an advance photocopy so I could read it before I interviewed the man. But I must say, I really like the cover of his book. I really do.
Okay, very quickly then. Are there any publishers out there that have impressed you of their design. I mean, I mentioned Penguin just now. Any others? Like Phaidon. Phaidon are very good.
Yeah, New Directions are amazing. Yeah. New Directions are amazing. And I think a lot of American university presses are very, very good.
Well, I think locally, you think of Fixie as being quite particularly good. They have a style.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Gaurav Budhaya, I think.
Well, I think, see, that's the funny thing. I can tell you a funny story about Gaurav Budhaya, because I took Park Chong, who leads Gaurav Budhaya, and because the, you know, left-leaning press, and I said, hey, Park Chong, you know, every cover is Rakyat, you know, whether it's lurid colors or it's black and white, it's all masses of people. I said, you know, you really have to graduate from this, the mass of people, book cover. But, you know, and he, you know, took it in the spirit of, you know, auto-criticism that any good leftist would do. And so, you know, so it's called auto-criticism because I offer the critique unsolicited.
Sharad, have you ever, I don't know.
Indulge in auto-criticism?
Yeah.
Auto-critique?
Okay. So there you go. Phaidon, Thames and Hudson, Penguin. Yeah, I love all those. We must move on, though. And in a moment, we're going to come back with one of the greatest movie stars of all time, MGR, here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9.
Save big at Banana Republic Factory with 60% off the entire store. Our biggest sale of the year. Plus, take an extra 50% off clearance. Stock up on dresses, shirts, and shorts under $15. Find your nearest store or shop online only at Banana Republic Factory.
And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Sharad Kutan, and Edin Ku on here, A Bit of Culture. I have been told that I must say A Bit of Culture more often. So we're going to go now to topic number two, where we will discuss, topic number three, I've lost the ability to count, the movie star from Tamil Nadu, MGR.
M.G. Ramachandran. It was the birthday of MGR, M.G. Ramachandran, last Tuesday. He turned 100 years old. And it struck me that there was very little noise about it here, considering that he was such a huge influence, not just on the Tamils, but on so many communities. I know the governor of Malacca, Khalil Yaqob, is one of his biggest fans and gets into MGR costumes and things like that. And yeah, absolutely. And has I think, an MGR gathering every year or something.
There's actually a fan club. I do believe there's a fan club. It used to be based in Brickfields. I know it because they used to produce a little booklet, a monthly booklet. And I remember one Christmas, they had MGR on the cover as Jesus Christ. and I thought, why not? Why not?
No, I kept it. I bought it. Very fluid, you see. It's very fluid. But, you know, he was taken on by Lat. Lat had quite a few of his flakes and quite a few MGR, the stylos who used to ride the bus and so on. So I grew up very much in an MGR environment. And I remember that every Saturday afternoons, we used to have Tamil movies on TV. And, of course, it was a great fight between... The fight was played out between the two great rivals of South Indian Tamil cinema at that time, which was MGR and Sivaji Ganesan, the hugely dramatic. So you'd get an action film with MGR, and then you'd get one of those tearjerkers and dramas with Sivaji. You know, it was very interesting as I grew up and began to understand, you know, who he had become, and the blurring of cinema and life icons, particularly in South Indian politics. I mean, this man was incredible from a movie star. He graduated, of course, influenced by Gandhi. But eventually
and Anna, right? Anna was his guru.
That's right.
Can we just jump in there? A quick potted history. So, I mean, he was a movie star, but he became a politician.
He was one of the first great movie stars of what we know today as Kollywood, which is the South Indian cinema.
So his movies were all in Tamil.
All in Tamil. And what was interesting is that he is not a native of Tamil Nadu. And he's not a Tamil by ancestry. He's Kerala and
my
Malayali.
People, if you
Malayalis. And you know the great,
I say very proudly,
the great rivalry between the Malayalis and Tamils is well known.
But he became the chief minister. Did he?
He became the chief minister.
And he was actually born in Sri Lanka, Cam. Yeah, that's the other funny thing.
Yes,
and because the Kandyan Tamils are different from the Jaffna Tamils.
Yeah,
but
yeah. And also just to quickly mention his long-time, what do we call it, girlfriend, mistress, whatever.
Lover, mistress Jayalalitha.
Who was also an actress.
And was also not Tamil. I think she's Telugu, if I'm not mistaken.
And also a hugely influential politician recently died.
Yes. I think one thing that interests me is, of course, the blurring between cinema, fictional life, and real life. I think there's nowhere in the world where this blurring becomes... almost non-existent.
I mean, what can I make the Philippines, perhaps? I mean, Australia.
Maybe, the Philippines. We're hugely dramatic society.
Ronald Reagan, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. Yeah.
But in
that's a small box.
But in the way that it is done with in South India is completely different, because you're iconized to almost a god level, you know. And these myths are constantly being played. So you know, you get the image of MGR as Jesus Christ. You get the image of Jayalalitha as a mother goddess. We know that Indira Gandhi, for example, went around, you know, putting herself really as a kind of goddess Durga, warrior goddess. But it is politics as high drama. If you go to India during election time, it's amazing how much of MGR is still invoked, especially by his party, the MIDMK. Okay. And that the rivalries are played out in very cinematic form. There are two famous parties. It's the dual system. And they keep fighting on almost in cinematic form. You can almost see one of MGR's
It's an eternal fight between good and evil. Can I ask a question? Because I've never quite understood. I'm not really into Indian movie in general. But what really...
There's Tamil movie and there's Hindi movie.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
So Indian cinema, you might say. But
they're so touchy. What was so great about MGR as a movie actor, movie star? What was so captivating that others couldn't do?
Charisma, I suppose. Charisma and this and style and histrionics, of course, I think, which is very much about what Indian cinema was.
Yeah, it's very theatrical. I mean,
it's melodramatic.
Everything's over the top in terms of gestures. You don't get a change in cinema acting until, I think, very late in the day when, you know, it was quieter. The thing that we've come to be used to when we watch contemporary European or American cinema, you know, it's very quiet. Everything else dramatic, the makeup, the hand gestures. Yeah. So you think of Rajinikanth throwing up his hands, and everybody, you know, I know Ibrahim likes to mimic on the stump here. It, you know, Malaysia likes to mimic Rajinikanth, and it gets the audience going. I mean, yeah. And audience that knows this cinema a lot, it's all these trigger points with people. It's all these buttons they push.
And can I ask also then, over the years, there's been a great kind of Malay interest in Tamil-Hindi movies. It's huge in Africa, in the Middle East. Why? How come other people are able to find?
It's not in recent years. It has been. I think I've not done a proper study of this, but I think the most watched film in Malaysian cinematic history is Sangam, which starred Raj Kapoor. I think just about every Malaysian of that generation watched that film, and cinemas were packed out here. What is its appeal? I think its appeal is its escapism and its melodrama. And one of the things that makes me very interested in MGR is how people understand that his films are escapism. And that escapism then translates into real life in politics. You know, I interviewed one of his great rivals, actually, in Madras, Chennai, early in 2001 or something. And he told me a very interesting story. MGR was incapacitated by a stroke for at least 5 years before he eventually died in 1987. He had this group of courtiers. He couldn't speak. He could hardly move. He could twitch his face and he could move a couple of fingers. And he would have these courtiers around his bedside. And they would attempt to interpret policy based on
his... He
was still chief minister,
My goodness.
And when he died, I mean, Tamil Nadu was, you know, in serious crisis because of the number of suicides upon his death. But what was very interesting was how they attempted to interpret policy based on a twitch of his hand or a face or a move of his fingers. You know, nothing could be more surreal. And this is the way politics has been played out. When we look at people like reality TV shows becoming presidents, I think the blurring between cinema and TV life into real life is becoming very real.
What do you think were his politics? Was he a populist? Was he man of the people?
No. He was one of the shrewdest and most astute. As you know, Indian politics is incredibly complicated, and so much depends on alliances. But you know, when he needed to be a rebel, he was a rebel, and when he needed to get into the fold, he got into the fold.
There was something also of Dravidian pride, I think, that
a great deal of Dravidian pride.
What's that mean?
The north-south divide, huge.
Oh, right.
So Dravidian pride would describe the culture of the South, right?
Yeah.
So the D in the DMK is Dravidian. So I think also, you know, what's, you know, coming back to the question of why people are interested in that, I think it's worth looking at Indian cinema, whether it's from the North or the South or, you know, East or West or whatever, is, and that one that we consider often kind of dismiss as popular, is that it has the archetypes. I mean, it's like watching wrestling, right? It's like people love archetypes. They love the good guy, the bad guy, going back to your Albuquerque story, you know, Albuquerque, is that thing, and it appeals to people. I mean, they're not stupid because it appeals to them. In fact, they know it for what it is, but it is the playing out of those dramas, and I think, and with great costumes and aplomb, and I think that's something you can get in Tamil cinema, popular cinema.
Well, we must move on, but can I just ask you quickly, Edin, do you know if younger people have a knowledge and awareness of MGR, or is he disappearing?
Yeah, I think he's fading away, in Malaysia anyway. In Tamil Nadu, he's still very much invoked. But in Malaysia, I think he's fading away. Hence, you know, 100 years, and there was hardly anything in Facebook. And I put up a posting. But people of my generation put up a posting, a couple of us. But, you know, he's being emulated in Rajinikanth. It's that same kind of appeal.
Yeah, but he's not the younger generation.
Sorry?
Rajinikanth is not a younger generation.
Oh, the hero of the younger generation of young Tamil boys. But Rajinikanth
is
the boss.
How old is he, though?
He's bald and he wears a wig, and he's not ashamed of taking off the wig when he walks in public.
And I think that's very interesting about... So you might say, actually, that, you know, people are not so shallow here, as it were. Here being, I don't know, everything from Chennai to Malacca. You know, because it doesn't matter. Because what appeals to them is not the superficiality of, you know, a flat washboard stomach and tight skin around your face. It's the substance of your personality.
Yes.
It is that style. I mean, something inner. It's an essence that they're attracted to, not the superficiality of the other.
Okay. You know, it's mangat, it's spirit.
Okay. I love MGR already. Okay. At the end of the show, we're going to play out with a song from an MGR movie. He didn't actually sing it himself, but it's made famous by MGR.
Yes.
But before we do that, we come to the final part of the show, recommendations. We recommend something that we think might be of interest. I'm going to go first. My one is, I'm only going to recommend it because it's giving me a great deal of pleasure at the moment, but it'll be a little bit lost on most people. But if you want to give it a bit of time, there's a character on British TV called Alan Partridge. Am I getting blank face? I'm getting very much blank face from Edin.
And Sherrod.
Okay, he's a character, and he embodies all the tropes of a sort of a B-grade British TV personality. But he has been transformed by the actor Steve Coogan into this creature. It's just very clever the way it's done. And there's a book out now called Nomad, theoretically by Alan Partridge, and I'm finding it absolutely hilarious. So I'd just say, as a comedic vehicle, as somebody you might want to check out, you may not fully get the in-jokes, but see the way that it's done. Alan Partridge, especially his new book, Nomad. So that's my recommendation. Not a great cover, Sherrod, but what's your recommendation?
Okay, mine's a book too, and it's from Penguin. It's a Penguin special series, and I'm going to show you the cover so you can see it's very...
The old-fashioned.
Yeah. And the book is called The Rise and Fall of the House of Bo by John Garnaut. I don't know. It's Garnaut. He's an Australian journalist. It's very slim. It tells you the story of Bo Xilai's, the Chinese Communist Party leader, one of many... who got caught up in a series of really strange events leading to his wife's incarceration for murder, or complicity in a murder, his own fall from grace from being, you know, a, kind of one of the up-and-coming princelings of the Communist Party. And so
he was the mayor of Shanghai or something.
Shanghai, from a smaller city, but right. It was still, it became a kind of showcase city for things that can be done. But he combined a huge amount of leftist, Maoist rhetoric with this love and embrace of capitalism and high-speed development. So it was a really strange combination in the man. Very dapper, good-looking individual, Bo Xilai. Pretty wife, lawyer, son who drove a Ferrari around Harvard or wherever he was, or Princeton that he studied at. So really a sense of the new China that you might have no idea if you just read stuff about a particular period. So new generation. Okay. I think it was fascinating. Told so well and very succinctly.
What's the name of the book again?
The Rise and Fall of the House of Bo.
By?
John Garnaut. Garnaut. Garnaut.
And it's on Penguin.
I bought
these special editions come out by Penguin Australia. You see.
Oh, is it? Is that it?
Very interesting how, you know, various branches have their own editions.
Yeah. I'm also just picked up after this the Siege of Tsingtao, which is a short history about the only war in the Far East fought during the First World War.
When the Germans took... We're taken by the Japanese. Okay. Edin, what's your recommendation?
Yeah, I've actually got two recommendations. One I'm going to lift off, Sharad. It's actually a series of postcards by the great New Directions designer Alvin Lustig. And you can buy it off Amazon or something. It's the book covers that he designed for New Directions Press. And for my own personal one is to look up the old Lat collection called Lots of Lat or Lots More Lat, I can't remember which, and see the wonderful Deepavali strip that he had done, which features several MGR lookalikes.
He's, in fact, has been in hospital of late.
Yeah, he's
not
well.
Through Lat, I got the impression that MGR and Elvis were essentially the same kind of thing.
It's the Jambul Tigakati.
It's the hair.
He was not in Bobby, was he?
No. Bobby's a Hindi movie. Film,
I knew that. Just testing you.
Silly English
just
boy.
Just testing you.
That's right. Ooh, ouch, burn.
Okay, so now we're going to move on. We're going to play out with a song. First of all, only remains for me to thank special honor guest, Edin Koo.
A lovely time, thank you.
Sharad Kutan.
Always a pleasure, Cam.
Myself, Cam Rustin. If you'd like to get in touch with us, do so on... There's our Facebook page. Like the page. And then don't expect any kind of, like, whiz-bangs or anything. It's boring as hell. But just press like. And we're now going to play out, as we finish this show, with an MGR classic here on A Bit of Culture on BFM 89.9.
பொன்பொருளை கண்டவுடன் வந்த வழி மறந்துவிட்டு கண் மூடி போகிறவர் போகட்டுமே. என் மனதை நான் அறிவேன், என் உறவை நான் மறவேன், எதுவான போதிலும் ஆகட்டுமே. நன்றி மறவாத நல்ல மனம் போதும், என்றும் அதுவே என் மூலதனம் ஆகும். கண்ணை நம்பாதே உன்னை ஏமாற்றும், உன்னை ஏமாற்றும் நீ காணும் தோற்றம் உண்மை இல்லாதது. அறிவை நீ நம்பு உள்ளம் தெளிவாகும், அடையாளம் காட்டும் பொய்யே சொல்லாதது.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Save big at Banana Republic Factory with 60% off the entire store. Our biggest sale of the year. Plus, take an extra 50% off clearance. Stock up on dresses, shirts, and shorts under $15. Find your nearest store or shop online only at Banana Republic Factory.